The state's LGBT couples take advantage of massive legal and social changes as they form families with kids. That conversation is just ahead. And good morning, live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross, First Coast Connect, always live on the radio, and now catch our daily podcast on iTunes. Just ahead, why the legalization of same-sex marriage in Florida is leading, experts say, to a gay adoption boom. 549-2937 to get on the line right now with your thoughts. Then later, the world's top futurist visits the Florida Theater. We'll tell you about it. Plus, The Spectator with all this weekend's events. All of that and more ahead this morning. But first this hour, it is a sea change in Florida. Now, this state was one of the last holdouts when it came to allowing gay couples to adopt children. That's only been legal here since 2010. Now, just 5 short years later, same-sex marriage is also the law of the land in the Sunshine State, and that has family lawyers predicting a boom in adoptions by married LGBT couples. What does this all mean, and how are they taking advantage of the change? Jacksonville family and marriage attorney Lawrence Datz is here now to explain and take your calls. Good morning.
Good morning.
Great to see you. And here's our question to callers. What are your thoughts about how the legalization of same-sex marriage in Florida is making it much easier for gay couples to adopt children? 549-2937, that's 549-2937, or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email and tweet the show, and we also welcome your comments on Facebook. Lawrence, it is striking to note that the gay adoption ban in the state was only struck down 5 years ago. Wasn't Florida the last state to have such a ban?
I'm not sure if we were the last, but we were probably one of the last, sure.
Right. And so 5 years later, same-sex marriage is legal, and family law attorneys have been following this change very closely because you're seeing more couples coming in and wanting to adopt. Is that right?
In general, that's true. I don't necessarily deal so much with adoptions. I primarily deal with prenuptial agreements and divorces and paternity cases. And so, but yeah, you definitely run into same-sex couples wanting to raise a child.
And let's talk about the changes. The Tampa Bay Times reporting that before the legal changes were made, the only way to give gay couples the same parental rights as straight couples was a really cumbersome legal procedure, and it often depended on finding a sympathetic judge. In particular, North Florida couples would go down to either Tampa or Miami to go before a judge to do this. They didn't feel they would get a fair hearing in Duval County.
Hard for me to comment, but we, you know, now, like you point out, the law has changed so that, and it's pretty well solidified. I don't know that in North Florida, same-sex couples are discriminated against any more than they would be somewhere else.
With the changes, can you tell us a little bit about the process known as second parent adoption?
I think you're actually referring to step parent adoptions. Mm-hmm. And what that is, the whole idea is now that Florida is allowing same sex marriages, parents would have. That is, married couples would have the same rights as heterosexual couples. And as a result, it would be possible for the parent or a step-parent to adopt a child, the biological child of the other spouse, the same as you would in a heterosexual couple.
And if you're just joining the program, we're talking about how the legalization of same-sex marriage in Florida is making it easier for gay couples to adopt in the state. What are your thoughts about this? It's 549-2937 to join the show. And it's interesting because just a week after gay marriage became legal, Florida's Department of Children and Families distributed a memo essentially instructing community-based care agencies that are marrying same-sex couples that they can now adopt kids jointly rather than having one partner adopt the child and the other partner go through that other process, the second parent adoption. What's that like psychologically for a couple that really wants to form a family, this change?
Well, I'm not a mental health therapist, but I would think that, at least from my perspective, it allows them to perceive themselves as a family just as any other family.
It's interesting because I'm quoting here from the Tampa Bay Times covering this story. Family lawyers in North Florida, until the same-sex marriage ban fell, said that they would regularly advise their clients to file for adoption in Hillsborough or Miami-Dade counties. Judges there apparently had a reputation for being more receptive to these cases and to these applications. One lawyer telling the Tampa Bay Times she successfully completed about 40 same-sex adoptions here in Duval. But others who didn't want to be identified said they didn't even want to try. They were worried that one negative ruling could affect this issue all over the state.
In all over Florida, when people, for an adoption, when people file a case, it's randomly assigned to a judge. And I think that the import of what you're describing is that if a case was assigned to a judge in the family law division in Duval County, they were more likely to run into a judge who would have ruled the adoption unconstitutional, and less likely in Hillsborough and Dade counties.
And it's 549-2937 to join the show this morning. What are your thoughts about the huge legal and social changes in Florida? With the legalization of same-sex marriage just a few months ago, more gay couples are seeking to adopt. What are your thoughts? 549-2937. Larry in Jacksonville. Hi, Larry.
Hi, how are you doing today?
Great, thanks.
I just wanted to add a little bit to your conversation that you were having this morning. I've had a partner for 45 years. I am from Jacksonville, and my partner's from Jacksonville. And in the 80s, we wanted to adopt a child or have a child, and we paid a young lady to be a mother to our child, and we were not able to adopt the child even after my partner had gone through the Family Services Project. We had a judge here in Jacksonville who did not want us to have a child, so after the child was born and we were ready to receive the child and take him home, he decided, because of his personal moral values and religion, that he would not let us have a child. So we went out of the country to Colombia and adopted a young boy who was 8 years old. And now he's 35, and I have three beautiful grandchildren, and we got married last year in New York. So that shows you how things have changed in this area over the last few years.
Wow, Larry, thanks for calling in and sharing your story. What about that Lawrence Dats?
Well, I would say, you know, the nice thing is now that those events of having to go other places and sort of go through twists and turns of, you know, adaptations are probably no longer will exist.
Yeah, it's a massive change. 549-2937, Abigail in Fruit Cove. Hi, Abigail.
Hello.
Go ahead.
Hi, I just wanted to comment on the topic this morning to say that in regard to the step-parent adoption, I recently went through one of those with my husband, and it has done a wonderful thing for my family. And my son is now able to have two parents who have someone to love him. And I think it's wonderful that Florida is embracing the right for gay couples to adopt. I just wanted to comment and say that I think it's a great thing.
Thanks, Abigail. Thanks for calling in. And we want everyone's thoughts and calls at 549-2937. We'll go to your tweets and emails and Facebook posts in just a moment. James on the north side. Hello, James.
Hey, Melissa. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing great. How are you today?
All right. I have a question. Forgive me because I'm just seeking knowledge. But what is a transgender person? I mean, I've asked a couple of people at work, and I've gotten different answers, but what is transgender? And I'll just take my ass off there.
James, thanks for the call. Of course, transgender is the T in the phrase LGBT, which refers to lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender. According to GLAAD, 90% of Americans now say they personally know someone who is either lesbian, gay, bisexual, but only 8% say they know someone who is transgender. So that's not an uncommon question to talk about transgender people And when you go to transgender, the definition of the term is an umbrella for people whose gender identity differs from what is typically associated with the sex they were assigned at birth. Lauren Statz.
Put it this way. I'm not aware of specific definitions in the law of transgender. The definition you've read, I would have thought it was someone who had a sex change operation, but I can see from the definition it's much broader than all that.
And couples that fall under that umbrella are now seeking to adopt as well. These legal changes will make it easier for transgender individuals,
yes.
Not just lesbian, gay, and bisexual. 549-2937. Meg on the west side. Hello, Meg.
Hi. I can shine some light on what a transgender person is, even though I'm not. What I've heard from reading is that a transgender person is someone who psychologically is born into the wrong body. They are, say, male, but they have psychologically always been female, or vice versa. But what I would like to hit on is perhaps what we're not even thinking about. I personally am an adoptee, and I would just caution those who are considering adoption, please consider, and I have a feeling that the gay community would probably do this better than the heterosexual one, just because it takes so much more effort for them to do so. Please consider that what you're really doing is human trafficking that is legal.
Why do you say that?
Well, because I'm an adoptee.
Okay.
And I have no idea. I was sold for $1,000 from Dallas, Texas to here. And I understand that adoption law is better than it used to be, but I have no family history. I have no medical history. And I have basically no biological family because of adoption. And right now, DCF has no business being involved in anything having to do with family law, really and truly, because all they really do and separate families because of the government money they get. So I would just really, really caution the gay community when dealing with the DCF, especially in places like Florida.
All right, Meg, that's Meg on the west side. Thanks for the call, Meg. We'll go back to your calls in just a moment. The number to join the show, 549-2937. Lots of tweets. Abel tweets the show, families are families, no matter the label assigned to them. What's important is that children are given opportunity and love. Michael tweets us, kids need a stable family. Adoption should be considered as a first choice. I'm glad these children are getting loving families. And lots of comments on Facebook. Here's one from Fran. I think we should open adoption to anyone that will give a child a good and safe home to grow up in. Ken, it's time once and for all for baby bullies to put their hate away and let tax-paying American adults do what they want, essentially is what he says. 549-2937. Mimi in Mandarin. Hello, Mimi.
Good morning. How are you this morning?
Great,
good
thank
to
you.
Speak with you. I have a very strong Christian background, and, you know, I'm not going to comment on that aspect of it, but my focus point is there are way too many children out there looking for loving homes. Regardless of, you know, religious affiliation or anything like that. And children of all ages need good parents. And if there's a loving parent out there, regardless of their sexual orientation, I think they need to be placed in good loving homes.
Thanks, Mimi. I think most fair-minded people, Lawrence, do agree on that. They want to see children in a stable home, if at all possible.
I think that's true, and certainly the recognition of same-sex rights in general with regard to adoption and marriage certainly opens the door for more of that.
So what advice do you have for couples listening to this who might want to adopt? What are some pitfalls? What are the steps? What can you tell us?
Well, the main thing, and I look at it from a little bit broader perspective, and that is, and I've encountered this in my practice, where a same-sex couple wants to raise a child. And so the main thing is to establish parental rights. Adoption is one method of establishing those rights. Another method would be through a surrogacy contract, but again, it needs to go through the statutory process. I would recommend that people seek out an attorney that specializes in adoption for that sort of thing. The one thing I think I would stay away from is occasionally people enter into an agreement to raise, just, you know, an agreement between them to raise a child. But the problem is it doesn't terminate the rights of biological parents and establish their rights as adoptive as some other form of parent.
So the best process is to go through the formal adoption process?
That would certainly, that strikes me as the most solid method. And then you have another whole host of issues, interesting issues at this point. Because
like what?
Well, I'm thinking more in terms of a same-sex couple who marries, because historically, with heterosexual couples, like for hundreds of years, the legal presumption is if a child was conceived or born during wedlock, it was the natural child of those parents. Well, needless to say, with a same-sex couple, that's not entirely possible.
Mm-hmm.
And let me backtrack just slightly. It is possible, for example, with a lesbian couple, that one child would be the biological parent, and I guess I'm misspeaking because I guess it could be, too, that the father could be a sperm donor, that is a mm-hmm. husband in a same-sex relationship, a male.
And there are those gay men who've had, especially here in the South, mind you, who've had children through a heterosexual marriage, then later come out as gay,
right?
End up with a male partner and have their own biological child. What about couples like that?
Well, and that's where I'm getting at. The really key critical legal piece is for the non-biological parent,
right,
to establish themselves in a legal way as a parent.
And here's an email from a listener. My partner and I have talked about adoption many times. I'd like to share there are also some kids who just need big brothers and big sisters. We have taken on a 13-year-old who just needs a mentor. Her grades are going up, and she just needed support with being a teenager. We are still open for adoption, but I wanted to let others know many kids need some assistance either with adoption or just a mentor. That's good. That's good advice, too. So what are your final thoughts about this for people that are listening and they need to know that they need to know the roadmap?
Well, I think the primary decision, it's almost like a little logic tree of sorts. You know, do you want to raise children? And if you do, should you do it as a married couple or should you be not married?
And that begs another quick question, a tweet from John. What do same-sex couples need to know about prenuptial agreements? Because with same-sex marriage comes same-sex divorce.
Absolutely, and that's something very much in the focus of my expertise. The advantage of prenuptial agreements is that they define people's rights in the events of divorce or death. And probably the foremost question I get about prenups is, you know, are they enforceable? And the answer, if they're done right, they're absolutely enforceable in Florida.
Yeah, no matter the genders of the couple.
Right. Put it this way, there is no law yet on same sex, but one would expect the logical extension to exist.
Fascinating topic, and we so thank you for sharing your thoughts with us. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
He's Jacksonville family and marriage attorney Lawrence Datz this morning, and much more still ahead later. The Spectator checks in with a look at all this weekend's events. But up next, how about this? The world's foremost futurist visits Jacksonville. We'll tell you about it in just a moment.
I'm Christian McBride, and on the next Jazz Night in America, the Modern Jazz Generation. It's the latest project from pianist Marcus Roberts.
Like if you cook a meal using your great-grandmother's recipe for a chicken dish, well, you're hungry, it's good, it's relevant, that's modern.
The Modern Jazz Generation. That's on the next Jazz Night in America.
Saturday nights at 8 on 89.9 WJCT.
Join WJCT and the Jacksonville Public Education Fund on Tuesday, March 10th for a special evening to talk about teaching and student success. Refreshments and a panel discussion will be followed by a screening of the new documentary, 180 Days Hartsville. The event is Tuesday, March 10th at WJCT Studios from 5:30 p.m. to 8 p.m. RSVP at wjct.org/events/teaching-transformation.
WJCT's Travel and Entertainment Auction is where you'll find over 300 items, most starting at 75% off at auction.wjct.org. Packages include lodging, attractions, dining, recreation, beauty, and more. The bidding begins March 10th and continues through March 16th. Log on to auction.wjct.org for more information.
WJCTnews.org is your source for the latest local, national, and international news 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Podcasts of your favorite local stories and shows, the WJCT First Read every weekday morning, and playlists from all of our after-hours music programming. From your computer or mobile device, see it all at WJCTnews.org.
Welcome back. Well, renowned artist and innovator Vito De Barry, who has a global reputation as the world's premier futurist. Yes, there is such a thing. He's coming to town. He'll appear at the Downtown Florida Theater next week for one night only. This evening is the first in what will be a string of international artists visiting Jacksonville. It's called the ViStar International Artist Lecture Series. Cultural Council of Jacksonville Executive Director Tony Allegretti joins us now with more about this. Hey, Tony.
Hey, thanks, Melissa.
Thank you for being with us. And I'm fascinated. Vito De Barry is the world's top futurist.
Right.
What is a futurist?
So what he looks at is our challenges, especially with cities. So by 2030, we're almost all going to live in the cities. You know, there's going to be so much of us, and we're going to really rely on good design and innovation. He's also an artist, which is why we brought him here. He's an excellent architect and designer and innovator. He is a very interesting guy. He's done TED Talks on 5 different continents. I think he's the only guy to ever do that. But just a really engaging, charming speaker. And let me say that it's next Wednesday at 5 at the Florida Theater.
Next Wednesday, 5 p.m. at the Florida Theater. And so in terms of looking at future trends when it comes to cities, how do you expect him to look at Jacksonville and our whole metropolitan area and kind of predict what we can look at in the next decade?
Sure. So that's a great question. So he was interested in Jacksonville. This is how we found him. He has friends here. He's got a place in Miami. He's a professor in Milan, has a place in Miami, had been traveling to Jacks. We found out about him and asked him if he'd be willing to come up and talk with us. And so he's doing so much in terms of research and looking at how to innovate and design in a way that makes us more sustainable. So how are we going to have a good aesthetic and atmosphere and take care of one another? And so it's really kind of where arts and science clash.
And on his website, he talks about how most innovations become news decades before they can actually go into widespread use, whether it's the internet, mobile apps, the Internet of Things, all right. of that stuff. He's way ahead of the curve looking at what's just sort of pie in the sky today.
Absolutely.
We're all going to be using one day.
Yeah, and so in advance of the thing next Wednesday, you can go to culturalcouncil.org/ViStar Lecture Series, read more about Vito, and we have a link to kind of a brochure, if you will, a digital brochure of some of the things that he talks about in that regard. So it's a lot of upfront research, and then how do we design and how do we make space and place make so that we can all survive.
Yeah, and placemaking is such a big part of it. The Cultural Council's really engaged in that, like bringing interesting events and ambiance to the urban core.
Sure, yeah. And, you know, public art and gathering spaces are a major part of that. And also, I should tell you, we're very happy. We talked last time, I think I was here, about the courthouse art. The courthouse art has been re-obligated. So huge props to the Cap Improvement Committee that Council Member Boyer leads. We have the courthouse art re-obligated, and we'll start on that project very soon. So all these public spaces and what we do in them, and in the aesthetic and the quality of life that comes from having art and culture infused in it, makes a huge difference to our quality of life here in Jacksonville.
And it looks as though he sort of looks at the intersection between art and culture and digital technology as well.
Yeah, he's very high tech. He's got one of his installations in Milan coming up is a bio paint that actually eats the carbon out of the atmosphere. It changes color depending on the pollution. He's doing a whole neighborhood in this paint. He's got a sidewalk where when you step on it, it captures the energy from your foot and stores it. I mean, he's 3D printing a barrier reef to cut back on a beach erosion. I mean, he's always got this sustainability twist.
Yeah.
But all of his stuff is just beautifully designed. It's really, really hot stuff.
Now, he's from Italy, but he lives in Miami, and he's called one of the three most important forecasters in the world. Not weather forecasters, just knowing how we'll be living.
That's right. Yeah.
It's so cool. And you said he was really interested in Jacksonville. Why do you think that is?
I think because we're a city on the move. You know, you've seen it with the recent, you know, Miami Herald article, and we're getting international attention on what we're doing. This is great. So this is something that's happening. I think the economic comeback is real in Jacksonville. And so there's a lot of interest, and the more exposure we get, you know, you and I know that it's a world-class city of culture. But words, you know, some people in our community don't realize it yet. And so that's another reason that this event is free, right? Come on Wednesday. Free is a big Jacksonville word, you know. Come on Wednesday. It's 5:00 at the Florida Theater. And see Vito, he's super engaging.
And this is just one of many initiatives that you in your leadership of the Cultural Council have going right now.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah. We are not sitting on our hands. There's lots to do, and most of the things are celebration of who we are. You know, we've got a lot to be proud of, and a lot to pump up. And I want to thank the Florida Theater, and especially ViStar. ViStar is underwriting this lecture, and so we're super pleased with them. That's another thing that we're really seeing. There's a growing respect and interest in funding arts and culture from our private sector, and I'm super happy about that.
Right, and you've been able to demonstrate the economic benefit. It's exponential. For a little bit of investment, the entire community gets a dividend.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. We're doing a data dive right now on the economic sector, the creative sector, and wait till you see some of these numbers. It's really impressive. We're a world-class city of culture. We need to walk around and be proud of that.
He's Tony Allegretti, Executive Director of the Cultural Council. Again, it's futurist Vito DeBerry. One night only, next Wednesday night, the 11th, at the historic Downtown Florida Theater, a free event.
That's right.
Yeah, great opportunity. Always so good to see you, and thanks so much for being here.
Thanks, Melissa. You're a gift.
Oh, thank you.
Appreciate it.
And we're back in a moment with a look at all this weekend's events from The Spectator, and a special treat, the Friends of the Public Library first big sale of the year. We'll tell you where to find that in a moment.
Listen to After Hours to relax with music that spans the world in all styles from classical to doo-wop. Weeknights at 7, only on 89.9 FM.
This Friday on Closing the Loop. Victoria Priester worked a lot of different jobs while she studied politics in college, and worked in Washington after graduation, but nothing felt as right for a career as wedding planning did. Closing the Loop, Fridays during Morning Edition and All Things Considered, on 89.9 WJCT.
Closing the Loop is sponsored in part by First Coast Home Pros, local specialists in carpet, grout, and upholstery cleaning.
The Florida Legislature is in session, and Capitol Report is your nightly connection to what's happening in Tallahassee as lawmakers debate and decide issues that affect all Floridians, such as expanding health care and gambling, protecting the state's water resources, private versus public schools, and prison reform. Hear Capitol Report each weeknight during the legislative session on this Florida public radio station.
Weeknights at 6:30 on WJCT 89.9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, a Justice Department investigation finds a pattern of racial discrimination by police officers and courts in Ferguson, Missouri. What's in that new report? How it could affect police departments nationwide.
Weekday mornings at 10 on 89.9.
Welcome back. Well, you don't want to miss this special book sale and family fun event this weekend as the Friends of the Jacksonville Public Library holds their first big to-do of 2015. President Gail Hunyar and Julie Brannon, president-elect of the Arlington Kiwanis Club, join us now with more. And I love these events. They're great. Ladies, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks so much for being with us. Gail, let's begin with you. The Friends of the Library is such a great organization, always raising money to keep our libraries strong. You're going to have a special overstocked book sale this weekend?
That's it. We have so many books. So we have decided to make this spring event $10 a bag. That's it. Come in, fill up the bag.
So you come in and you can take home as many as you can carry?
Yes, we provide paper bags and you fill them up. Then that's it. It's $10 plus tax, 70 cents. So $10.70 will buy you a grocery sack full of books that you get to pick.
And you can take your time, pick out whatever you want.
Right. There's children's books, adult books. We even have VHS and audio books, books on CD. And everything is well organized. And, of course, it's a big warehouse. And so we have more books than some of the libraries do.
That's amazing. Yeah, and so, Julie, the Arlington Kiwanis Club is also involved, correct?
That is correct. We are helping the Friends out by holding a family fun day, carnival. We'll have a bouncy house and some carnival games. The funds raised through the sales of tickets will benefit the Friends of the Jacksonville Public Library. We're also holding a sidewalk art, chalk art contest. So if you are a budding artist or an established one, you can come out at 10 o'clock on Sunday to start your chalk art. And we have guest judges from Jacksonville University's Fine Arts Department coming to declare the winners.
That's some great prizes. That's excellent. And this, of course, is at the University Park Library on University Boulevard North in Arlington. Can you tell us a little bit, Gail, about the history of the Friends of the Library?
Well, the Friends of the Library have been supporting the Jacksonville Public Library system since sometime in the 50s. Wayne Wood tells us that we started out in Hemming Park.
Is that right?
Yeah. Many years ago, someone took a box of books over there and sold them to the public. And that has been the beginning of the book sale sensation.
It's been going ever since.
Yes.
How about that? And, you know, there was a referendum that didn't make it to set up this independent taxing district to keep the library funding separate and strong. And I'm sure they'll try again. But your organization really fills a vital role, doesn't it, in helping support the library?
Yes, it does fill a vital role. It's too bad that the referendum did not pass. But Save Our Public Libraries is not dead. It's still there. But the Jacksonville Public Library needs the Friends organizations that we have. There's a large group, and smaller local libraries has their own Friends groups, but we try to raise as much money as we can to fill those gaps that the library always has. Summer reading programs, citizenship things. We have lots of programs that are supported by people coming to our sales and buying a book or two or a whole bag.
Now, where do you get the books?
The library gives the books
to us. They come from the library.
And we get a lot of books from people like you and me. People that go to Books A Million, read their book, clean out their closets.
When people can donate their books. So people could come and buy some books and donate too?
Oh, yes. Sure. Always. We love donations.
And, you know, Julie, this is such a nice event for Arlington too.
Yeah, we're very excited to be bringing this to the community. We hope to make it an annual event, to be perfectly honest with you, because we just really believe in the area, and we think there needs to be more activities for families of a Sunday afternoon or what have you in the area to keep Arlington as great as it is.
Because it's a great family neighborhood. You don't want the families venturing somewhere else to enjoy their Sunday.
Exactly. Arlington Kiwanis has we got chartered in 1954, and we've been working with the community since then to increase the standard of living and the opportunities for children in the area. So we're very pleased to be continuing that tradition.
Isn't the Friends of the Library's warehouse right there, too?
Yes, it's connected to the library.
It's right there at the University Park branch.
It is. And we're so fortunate that the library has been generous enough to allow us that space so that we can turn around and sell the books for them.
So if you're just tuning in, again, it's the Friends of the Jacksonville Public Library's overstocked book sale. Coming up this weekend, it's a book sale and family fun event. Lots of fun stuff for kids to do. March 6th, 7th, and 8th at the University Park branch. That's 3435 University Boulevard North. $10 for one huge bag of books, whatever, as many as you can carry out, and lots of fun for kids, too. What a great event. And thank you both so much for telling us about it.
Well, thank you for having us. We appreciate it.
We were joined by Friends of the Library President Gail Hunyar and Julie Brannon, President-elect of the Arlington Kiwanis Club. Again, that event is this weekend. And in a moment, we'll have a look at all the rest of this weekend's events with The Spectator here on First Coast Connect.
WJCT and the Cultural Council of Greater Jacksonville are accepting submissions from local artists for The Square. The Square is an online venue where local artists share their work with the community and compete for a chance to be featured on WJCT TV and radio. Submit now through March 31st. To learn more about The Square and to submit your work, visit wjct.org/thesquare.
Travel back in time with Radio Theater, Doo-Wop Revival, The Great American Songbook, and Juke Joint. Throwback Sunday nights beginning at 7 on 89.9 WJZT. Looking forward to looking back.
Do you remember your first time?
My first time? First time of what?
It's a little uncomfortable. Should I talk about it now?
Your first time listening to NPR's Morning Edition, that is.
I was 6 years old riding around in my parents' car. And I was like, what is this stuff? And I just kept listening.
No matter how many times you've listened, listen again tomorrow to Morning Edition from NPR News.
Weekday mornings beginning at 5 on 89.9 WJCT, community-supported public radio.
On the next Fresh Air, Larry David, the creator and star of Curb Your Enthusiasm and co-creator of Seinfeld, he has a new play on Broadway, which he wrote and reluctantly stars in. So who did he intend to cast in the lead?
Anyone. Anyone in particular. Anyone. Except me.
Join us weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT, community-supported public radio.
Welcome back. Well, lots going on across the First Coast this weekend. from the Home and Patio Show to Loretta Lynn to the opening of the Riverside Arts Market. So much to do, and here she is every Thursday to take us all around town. We welcome the mistress of mayhem, the maven of mirth, Jacksonville Magazine's Carrie Speckman here today.
I love her. She's my favorite.
She's my favorite. Oh, it's you.
Oh, oh my gosh.
Tell me, what has been up with you for the last week, my dazzling disher of delights?
Well, I have to tell you, I had to rush over here today because I was on the phone with one of the special guests for the Home Patio Show.
Oh, is that right?
His name is Chris Lambton. Lambton. It's hard to say.
Get it right, Spectator.
He was on The Bachelorette. He was one of the final
two.
Oh,
is that right?
He was my favorite. I hope he's not listening. He lives in Boston. It's fine. He was my favorite.
They can stream us up there.
He's on a plane, I think.
Oh, there.
My favorite Bachelorette contestant of all time. Like, he got out of the limo. Like, I love him. So I just interviewed him.
Uh-huh.
Love him more.
Excellent. So he'll be at the Home and Patio Show.
He has a show on HGTV called Yard Crashers. So he'll be there today. I think he'll be there all weekend.
He's showing how to transform neglected backyards into amazing outdoor spaces.
As a matter of fact, he is. That's what he'll be doing. And delightful. Speaking of delight. And then also they're going to have on the Jacksonville Magazine cooking stage, Elena David from TLC's Next Great Baker.
Oh, lots of big names.
And then some of course, Jacksonville's celebrity chefs. Of course, Dennis Yan from Blue Bamboo, Tom Gray from Moxie, Richard Nunn will be on tomorrow.
He's a cook.
He's a chef.
He's
went
a
to
chef.
Le Cordon Bleu. Yeah.
Channel 4's own Richard Nunn.
He worked at a Wolfgang
That's
restaurant.
Le Cordon Bleu.
Is that what I said?
Le Cordon Bleu.
Le Cordon Bleu. 13 Gypsies, Taco Lou, I mean, and samples.
Very nice. That's the Home and Patio Show today through Sunday.
P.S., if you go to my Facebook page, you can get a discount code for 50% off.
Ooh,
you're welcome.
Now that's a deal, Spectator.
Yeah, Spectator.
How about that?
Facebook.
Okay. Also tonight, it's the one and only Loretta Lynn at the Florida Theater.
The
Loretta Lynn. The coal miner's daughter.
I was just going to say, did you know she was a coal miner's daughter?
Yeah. You didn't?
I was kidding.
I can't believe she's out still performing. That is a huge...
How old? I mean...
That's amazing.
I don't mean to be... How old is she?
She's got to be 80.
Do you think?
I would think.
I'm sure Sean can find that faster.
Sean will find it.
Of course.
Yeah, Loretta Lynn, what a legend.
And then she just did some CD or some songs with Jack White of...
Yeah, she did. She just did a collaboration with Jack White.
She's the woman.
Yeah, she's a legend, an icon. She's performing tonight at the Florida Theater. Incredible.
Here we go. Here it is.
And according to Sean Birch, Loretta Lynn is 82.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
Get it, girl.
Yeah, she's still out there.
Coal miners' daughters, you know, they're not just little wilting daisies.
Oh, heck no.
You're a coal miner's daughter.
Did you see the film?
No, I didn't.
No, you got to. That's a classic film. Yeah. Sissy Spacek, Tommy
yes.
Lee Jones.
Mm-hmm.
All
mm-hmm.
right, so that's tonight.
Lots of coal.
Also tonight, the WOKV Hobnob at Everbank Field on the mayor's race and other races. And then tonight, it's Joe Nichols at the Morocco Shrine.
Joe Nichols, yes. He will be here at the Morocco Shrine, just as you said. I believe it's
Tell me all about Joe Nichols.
I believe it's at 7 p.m. He's another country
fella.
He hasn't quite obtained iconic status as the Loretta Lynn, but I believe we hear him in the
background. Yeah, sounds great. Well, Sean Birch, of course, is the host of our very own country show, Country Crossroads. So if anyone can pull these songs up, it's Sean.
Get it, Sean.
Why do I keep saying all over this. He's all over this. Oh, wait. He's going to speak. Hang on. Everybody hang on.
Yeah, this is not necessarily the music that I would play on Country
Crossroads. Oh, snap, Joe Nichols!
Nothing against Joe Nichols. He's perfectly fine. But.
Okay, he's perfectly fine.
Sean's more of an alt-country guy.
Me too, me yeah. too. Old 97s?
Yeah, old 97s.
See how cool I am, Gord?
There you go. There
See,
you go.
I'm kind of older school.
All right, so that's tonight... tomorrow night, it's Paul Williams coming to the Symphony.
The
Paul Williams. The one-man hit machine. He's won every award there is. Songwriters
he's
Hall
probably
of
even
Fame.
Made up some just to give them to him.
You know, he's written Rainy Days and Mondays. We've Only Just Begun. Evergreen. I didn't know he wrote that.
And The Rainbow Connection.
The Rainbow
Get
Connection.
Get out your tissues, everyone.
It's amazing. Yeah, so he'll be performing with the Symphony.
And
How
I think
exciting.
He's going to be like chatting in between songs. They're calling it an evening with Paul Williams.
That, yeah, that's so much incredible musical talent in town this weekend. It's impressive.
I know.
Okay. Down in St. Augustine, it's the St. Augustine Lions Seafood Festival. That's always a fun deal, right?
Yeah, they're going to have more than 100 arts and crafts exhibitors. They're going to have live music, of course, delicious seafood. They'll have a kid zone and pirate landing.
Very nice. Got to have pirates in St. Augustine.
Belly dancers.
All right. Now, and that's all weekend. Let's talk about Saturday's Northeast Florida Veg Fest in Riverside. 7,000 people are coming to this.
Are they really?
Speckman. Yes.
Is that what Julie Watkins says?
Yes, it is.
You can't believe her.
She has turned.
She was a meteorologist.
And she is the First Coast's most famous vegan.
She is. Maybe even the
Southeast. And she has grown this event over the years.
Grown. Veg. Get it? She's cultivated it.
It's really cool. And you don't have to be a vegetarian to go.
Or vegan.
It's going to be a lot of fun for everyone. Speaking of which, you know, she's one of the people that for years had protested the elephants being part of the Ringling Brothers Circus, Barnum & Bailey Circus.
I think she was protesting the circus in general.
Yes. Well,
especially the elephants.
It's a big announcement today. Ringling came out this morning and said they're going to phase out the elephants.
I did not know that.
Yeah. Big change.
I wonder what made them...
Julie Watkins.
Oh, of course. No, she's pretty awesome, so...
No. There was a movement.
I know there was, but I'm just wondering, like, why...
Well, the argument was that it wasn't humane treatment of the elephants. That was the argument against it.
They probably had a union, the elephants union, probably.
We need a spectators union.
I would be the only one in it.
I know. A union of one. Okay. Now, speaking of which, you're also affiliated with RAM, the Riverside Arts Market.
I am, my lady. It is opening Monday. Saturday. It's been open all year. They only take 1 week off. But this is like full-blown RAM. They have more than 130 vendors. They'll have music all day on the River Stage. It's been Winter Ram, which is just basically half of it, but they're having a parade. They would love you to join in the parade at 10:15.
Yeah, spring has sprung because they are officially opening
10
Saturday.
10 to 4.
Also, I want to make
under the bridge.
This is not on your list, but I want to make a quick mention of this. Remember the movie The Insider with Al Pacino and Russell Crowe?
I do, and just be happy I don't do any Al Pacino
impressions. I want you to
in a minute because I
spoke the other day on the phone with the guy.
With the insider?
That Pacino portrayed.
Okay.
Former 60 Minutes producer Lowell Bergman. He's the guy who uncovered that whole tobacco scandal in real life. Now, he also is a former producer with PBS's Frontline, and he's going to speak on the Flagler College campus on the 8th of March about his experiences in investigative journalism. Take a quick listen.
I'm going to talk about investigative reporting, or what we call it, what it means to me in my 45-year career, and what it may mean to other people in the audience in general, and how it's doing, and why it's important.
That's Lowell Bergman Sunday, 7:30 p.m. in the Lewis Auditorium, Flagler College. He doesn't sound like he's much more low-key than Al Pacino. Let's just say that.
Just a little bit.
But just as talented.
Yes.
No. I was hoping for an impression.
I told you, I don't. I do other impressions. I just don't do Al Pacino.
All right.
Everybody does Al Pacino.
Yeah. Well, how can you resist?
But
I will try. Okay. Last but not least, let's talk about, The Color Purple starring Jennifer Holliday.
Jennifer, and I'm telling you, I'm not going Holliday.
The Jennifer Holliday.
Yeah. Like multi-Grammy, Emmy, not Emmy. Tony, yes, the one, the only. She won't be singing that song, of course, because it's not in The Color Purple, but she will be starring in it. And it's on Sunday. There are shows at 3 and 7:30 at the Times Union Center.
At the Times Union Center. Pretty incredible. The Armada playing Sunday as well. Sunday at 4 p.m. in the baseball grounds.
Well, they're called, right? I think it's the Community First Field. Okay. I believe it's what it's called.
Okay.
I know. Let's make it really confusing.
Okay. But they're playing...
Also, a.k.a. the baseball grounds of Jacksonville.
Exactly. They're playing the Charleston Battery. And then, and let me also put this in quickly, because you have an incredible list here. Bull riding. What's going on?
There will be some of the most famous bull riders and up-and-comers. It's the most most thrilling 8 seconds in sports.
That's at the... Times Union Center?
That would be funny.
At the Veterans Arena?
Oh, Melissa.
Oh, my gosh. Did I really just...
You really did.
I really
yeah,
mixed up my venues.
Yeah, in the orchestra hall.
Now, see, that I would pay to go and see. You put the orchestra and the bull riding together
they could
on
play,
stage.
Like, what is that song? Like, that famous song, Toreador? Whatever.
Sure.
Yeah, whatever.
They could play that.
Well, it'll be at the arena. Sorry to disappoint you.
Go to thespectator.com's website if you heard an event you want to find out more about, or her Facebook page to get that discount.
50%!
For the Home and Patio Show.
They must be
show.
Crazy!
Well, you are.
I am crazy.
The always our comrade in comedic chatter, Carrie Speckman. And we do appreciate you being here.
And I appreciate you right back.
That's our program. Thanks for listening, and thanks to all of our guests and callers. The show's producer is Sean Birch. Our theme, composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony Orchestra's Pyotr Chevchik. If you've got feedback for us, just send an email to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org, and make sure to catch our daily podcasts. They're now up on iTunes. Next on Diane Rehm, a Justice Department investigation finds a pattern of racial discrimination by police officers and courts in Ferguson, Missouri. Diane and guests discuss what's in the new report and how it could affect police departments nationwide. That's next. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow for our Friday Media Roundtable. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.